If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love, light, and sound of the Supreme Lord. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is the odd ramifications of our enlightening process. So if you're ready, come present and take a deep breath and embody and own your vaster self, that universal vastness that presents as a divine clarity into time and space. It presents as a sense of knowing deep from your core. It presents as a clarity of seership. And it presents simply as presence, where your innate loveliness simply presents. It's the most do nothing and everything is done place that you could ever imagine. It is devoid of any iota of stress, effort, and I would say that impetus that we have to mess with things rather than simply allow them to be. I would say that is perhaps one of the definitive characteristics of our false self, is that it has seemingly this imperative to want to mess with things. You know the old saying, don't fix it if it's not broken. You are not broken, and therefore you do not require fixing. Can you let yourself be? Can you let yourself alone? Can you give yourself the benefit of the doubt that maybe, just maybe, all of these enlightened men and women, these Satpurushas, these great beings who have awakened to the self, perhaps give them the benefit of the doubt that they may be correct when they say, you are divine, true and through. And no matter how you try to fix yourself or mess with yourself, you remain as God created you. That your passage through time and space and karmic fields is overall a big nonsense. It never happened. That's hard to take aboard, isn't it? We so believe that our daily life and the things that we're involved with are real. And yet these enlightened ones tell us in one voice that our experience in this day and our experience at night are equally dreams. Okay. So then what do? Well, if you know that, if you awaken to that, you can enjoy life. When you awaken within the dream state, as some lucid dreamers do, they have fun running the scenarios forward and backward in time, changing the outcome, bringing in different colored characters and costumes. In other words, they become proactive in the dream state and have fun with it. And that's what we're designed to do here, to become proactive participants. Not just, hang out like frogs on a log and let things happen, That's not the idea here. Oh, it's all a dream. I don't need to do anything with it. No. We are to have life and that more abundant. We're to come alive and awake within the dream, the samsara, the maya. Mahamaya is a great enchantress. She puts on all of these guises and dances and parades as if she were a something. But really, she's calling us to the game. She's calling us to play. She's saying, come, come, come. Can't you catch me in my guise, in my mischief, in my play acting? Come on, come on, play. Don't take all this so seriously. Let's have fun here. So when you awaken in the lucid dream state, you can have a lot of fun playing within the dream. Exactly, in the daytime too. You can begin to exercise your conscious mastery, which you all have. It came with the equipment, let's say. You're just not quite awakened and used to playing in that dimension. But why not? You can. It's available to you. You can begin to take charge and dominion over the energetics of your day. Not in a way to exercise power and control and manipulation and all of that. That's not what we're here to do. We're to dance in the light and love and joy of our radiant divinity. We're to laugh. We're to enjoy one another. We're to love our life. We're to enjoy what we eat, what we drink, the beautiful aromas we inhale, the experiences that we have every day, which can be as simple as sitting by your windowsill and looking at the beautiful blue sky and clouds. The other day I sat for maybe an hour just looking at the sky, which was a perfect Wedgwood blue, with clouds so white, they looked exactly like puffs of cotton. And I was transported into higher awareness and just the sheer imbibing of that beauty. We're sitting quietly and listening to all of the sounds that surround us all the time. The birds and the children and the traffic and the everything. Every sound is an echo of the one voice for God, the one sound current. Everything is part of the divine harmony. Do you know, they say, that if all of the birds stop tweeting and all of the insects stop chirping, our world would collapse and implode upon itself. That these little sounds form part of the divine harmonic that keeps the cohesiveness of existence intact. And so we are to enjoy our life, our relationships, our significant others, our children, our daily everything is part of the dance of life that has no beginning and no end, and enlightenment is open-ended and limitless. So I call it the enlightening process because it is a process. And there's some odd ramifications in this enlightening process, which I wanted to look at a little bit tonight with you. So often when we think we are bringing our life more into a spiritual focus and center, we start to meditate. We start to bring in more conscious light from the higher levels into our human mind, our human personality. Sometimes everything seems to come apart. And we may say, what in the world have I gotten myself into? Where did I go wrong? Isn't it strange that we often go to what did I do wrong? Where did I go off the path? Rather than saying, what did I do right here? We think that a life that is without change, predictable, you know, in its day-to-day predictable rut, we think that's a good life. That's not a good life. That is probably an incarnation in which you're resting. But I don't think anyone, certainly no one listening to these radio shows, is in a cycle of resting. This is the lifetime that many of us are choosing to make our final lifetime, and we are awakening back in the heart of God that we've never left. We're awakening from that nightmare of separation, that nightmare of warfare and all of the things that happen that we see on the nightly news. We're awakening from that picture of reality, or unreality, I should say. We're awakening from that nightmare, let's put it that way. And as we awaken from our fictitious self that we have projected out of our imagination to our true spiritual identity, there are many odd ramifications. Often, our dawning insights reveal just the opposite than we would expect. The Course in Miracles describes this cycle as our period of undoing. I think you can all relate to that. Our period of undoing, where we seem to lose everything to which we've had an attachment that we have used to define our identity and self of our life, our sense of who we are and what we are. We have built around ourselves this scaffolding to seemingly hold intact who we think we are and what we think we're about. So the period of undoing undoes all of that. Sometimes it looks like divorce. Sometimes it looks like leaving home and heading off across the world somewhere. It can look like many things. Or it can look like a cycle of just intense inner confrontation, an inner shifting, an inner turmoil. But often that will present as some form outwardly. And what it says in the Course of Miracles is that we seldom ever realize that what is going from our life at this point never had real value to begin with. So we have the feeling that God is punishing us and taking all of the things that we love away from us, and it makes us a little pissed off at God, a little peeved, sometimes just outrageous. Anger rises. Why is God doing this to me? Why me? Sometimes it's your health that collapses. Whatever. I want you to know that God only sees itself when it looks at you. It sees an intact, whole, perfect, holy, lovely, perfect divine image of itself. It does not ever, ever, ever see you and me as sinful, fallen, broken, beyond redemption, needing of punishment. Please know that all of the doctrines of punishment were generated out of some human's mind. Please know that. Please know that all philosophies, all religions, all doctrines, all dogmas have nothing to do with God. If you would know God, look deeply into your eyes. Beyond the mascara and the bloodshot, you know, look deeply into the light in those divine portals and ask to see. Really ask to see beyond the form. Beyond the drama, beyond the appearance. And know that it takes something to jolt that consciousness that has become stratified and stagnant in karmic ruts, like cul-de-sacs where you go around and around and around. You've got to break free. And to break free, very often, you, as a divine consciousness, will orchestrate a complete disruption of your life. And you have to know that it is to awaken you beyond the nightmare. Don't buy into any thought that you're punished, that you have to be punished, that you have to even work out karma. Even that is a big fiction. You're not broken. You're not fallen. You're not sinful. You don't need fixing. What you need is appreciation from yourself. You need to cut yourself some slack. You've got to know your own value, your own worth, and that you are loved. But you have to love yourself, or you'll never recognize that God loves you, that the universe loves you, that your rug loves you, your dog loves you, your chair loves you, your bed loves you. Everything you lay your eyes on loves you, adores you, because you are divine. You are loved, and you are blessed, because you are divine. That's all you need to know about yourself. So instead of asking, oh, what did I do wrong? Why am I being punished? Why me, God? Thank the wisdom of your higher awareness that has said, you know what? Enough already with this humdrum life that you don't really enjoy anyway. I'm going to break it all off of you like incrustations of the ages. And I'm going to set you free until you actually feel like as light as a feather, borne aloft on the holy breath. Imagine that, if you will. Like, go right now and imagine that you're a feather. Let go and allow the holy breath of divine spirit bear you aloft. Let go. What are you trying to hold on to? What are you trying to control? Let go. That's what's creating the stress. You're trying to hold on to things that don't even exist except in your mind. Take a deep breath. Let it all go. Let it all go. Just release everything to the perfection and love that is. Ground yourself in that sense of vast, unlimited, omnipresent spaciousness. That really defines your presence as God. So this is part of relinquishing that which had no meaning, had no value, but we thought it did. We thought it did. And as you bring more soulific light from your soul into your mind, it's like bringing a flashlight into an old attic. And the beam reveals the cobwebs and the dusty and forgotten remnants of one's past and all the hidden contents of our subconscious mind. And skeletons seem to arise to life and do their macabre dance as if they had a life of their own. But it's all conjurations of a fevered ego mind that has forgotten its divine moorings. But memories surface, nostalgic feelings, dormant desires, unrequited loves and longings can overwhelm the would-be meditator. And then life picks up its pace and some feel like everything is whirling and twirling, and they even become sometimes physically dizzy as an effect of the turning and transforming of the inner consciousness. Did you ever wake up and feel like you had your body on backwards? I kid you not. You can wake up some morning and feel like you've got your body on backwards. Or that you're wearing somebody else's body. Well, sometimes that happens. But just saying, all of these things begin to surface when you bring the higher light into your lower consciousness, into your personality. And sometimes when you meditate, you try to make the mind still. Well, you might as well try to convince a dog that doesn't have to pant, or trying to convince the waves that they don't have to keep coming in and out on the shore. The mind is designed to think. That's its nature. Leave it alone. Leave your mind alone. Leave yourself alone. Let yourself be. You can't stop the mind from thinking. That's its nature. You can, however, transcend it to the level just above the mind, which is like surfacing into a very, very wonderful clear blue sky. So the incoming solific light is what is stimulating all of these things and bringing them to the surface. Why? So that you can let them go in the loving. You can release them into the loving. That's why they're coming up. Some people call it forgiveness. I don't think many of us have much of an idea of what forgiveness is. Most of us think that we're forgiving something that actually happened, that we actually did wrong, that actually deserves punishment, but somehow we're going to forgive it, or deserves vengeance, whatever the case may be. That's not forgiveness. God has no need to forgive you because God has never seen anything that needed forgiving. God only can see itself. It can't see a lie. It can't see a fiction. It is the very sight of truth itself. So, become aware of how your inner and your outer worlds reflect each other. It becomes so fun. It's one of those fun things that makes life so enjoyable and so delightful, because you begin to see how it all works together, how the whole universe and everything in creation is conspiring to kiss you awake, to find ways to surprise and delight you, to bless you, to make you happy. Everything in nature wants to dance with you, wants to make love with you, wants to be your beloved. So, one example of how the inner and outer worlds work, I'll take from my own life. This happened, back in the 90s. I had asked for a new mantra as I had gone recently to a new level in the spiritual realms, and I needed a new mantra to match that vibration. So, I quieted down and asked inwardly, and I immediately heard a mantra drop into my mind, but I wanted to have the confirmation that I'd heard it accurately. So I was en route by plane from one city to attend a spiritual seminar in another city, and when I got off the plane and walked into the greeting areas, lo and behold, there was an Oriental girl, one of the greeting committee, obviously waiting for one of the disembarking passengers, and she was holding up a large placard with my new mantra printed on it. Yes, the very mantra that I had heard in my mind was the name of the passenger that she was trying to locate. And as I said, she was an Oriental girl, and my new mantra was an actual name of the person that she was greeting. Now, if that isn't a divine rigged setup, I don't know what is. But to make absolutely sure I got the message, as I was exiting the parking lot, I noticed the car's license plate in front of me had the same name. Hello? Was that a confirmation, do you think? So that's how the whole spiritual journey is set up. I tell you a truth, there's no way one can ever be truly lost, because the signposts are everywhere if you pay attention. Everywhere. So another odd ramification that occurs, as you begin to see, is what some refer to as your shadow self. Now here's where people get all bent out of shape, because the paradox is this. The closer you draw near to the true divine self, the more you become aware of your egocentricities. And for the first time, you'll notice, perhaps, how selfish, judgmental, lustful, greedy, ego-driven, how hostile and envious you are. Or are you? I've just gotten through saying that you are eternally one with God, indistinguishable from God, ever pure. You remain as God created you. So what are you looking at? You're looking at your past judgments upon yourself and your behavior. You are seeing what you have placed upon yourself as a label, as an indictment. And here's another place where some might say, forget it, I'm out of here. Whereas another might sink into a deep, dark night of the soul, a deep funk and gloom, disheartened by what now has been brought to light, feeling even more unworthy, guilty, shameful. And none of this is real. You've never been ever less than purely divine. You've never been less divine than you are this moment. And you'll never be more divine than you are this moment. Get it? You'll never be more divine and perfect than you are this moment. So you're simply awakening. So keep digging underneath that pile of you know what, there's a pony. So you've got to know who you are, or when you start to see the shadow self, it's going to shatter you. You're going to identify with it. You're going to pass yet another judgment upon yourself, and the soul's going to back off and say, sorry, I don't come in where there's judgment. I enter in only where there's love. So quit it already. And this is where the need for spiritual studies come in, because you have to be on some sort of a track that's tried and true, a bona fide spiritual path that can clearly tell you from the higher God-realized beings of that lineage who you are as a divine being, and point out to you the characteristics of the false self, so at least as you go on your journey, you can identify and discern that which is real from that which is unreal. You've got to have that built in somehow in your understanding. The Bible will clarify that. The scriptures of every world faith will pretty much do the same. Or esoteric training, theosophy, something like that, Ekankar, the movement of spiritual inner awareness. All of these paths will teach you who you truly are and what you truly are. But perhaps the clearest of all would be the Vedas, which come from no human author. That's the very living word itself, beyond time, so as far as we actually know. And the Bhagavad Gita is very, if you get it without the translations and commentaries and all that stuff, Just get a simple Bhagavad Gita. It'll tell you everything you need, you really need to know about yourself, and offer every kind of a path you could imagine based on the different personalities and proclivities we each have. And of course, the Course in Miracles, which is a very advanced path. But if you're drawn to that, then that would be good for you. There, you know, there's all different kinds of paths. You have to find the one that fits you and not try to fit yourself to the path. After a while, you don't need a path. A path of religion is like training wheels. It keeps you from falling into the ditch. It keeps you going in the right direction. But at some point, you take off the training wheels and you can go on your own. So religions are much like fences that you put around a sapling tree to keep the goats and the animals from, you know, knocking the tree over. But after the tree is firmly rooted and becomes a strong tree, then you can tie the goats and the cow and whatever to the tree. No problem. So use things when they're necessary to support you. But at some point, you will find that you don't need any of these training wheels, any of these supports. You become autonomous in the sense that you live and operate from your direct knowing, your direct divine realization. And to realize that you're responsible for the life that you live. As a divine being, you assume the responsibility for everything that shows up in your environment, in your mind, in your dreams. Everything that you will ever see, inwardly and outwardly, but mirrors something within you. Not as an indictment, not as a reason to be down on yourself again, but just to let you know that things on this dimension reflect. They're reflective. They resound. They reflect what we are energetically. But if you want to really have a reflection of who you really are, go sit in the presence of a totally God-realized person that still speaks. Many of them no longer speak. And you'll have that experience. Because they will mirror who you truly are, and you will see in them what you are. You will see in your guru, if it's a real guru, if it's a real avatar, you will see in them who you are. So it's very important to pay attention to what you're seeing in your spiritual preceptor. Pay attention. And also what you see in your brother and sister. That is what you're fortifying in yourself. And in the Course in Miracles, it says, as you see your brother, so that brother will be to you, or sister, either your savior or your jailer. That will be your savior if you see the Christ in that one. That will be your jailer if you see the ego in that one. Well, these are very profound things. Very profound. So when the dweller on the threshold appears, sometimes it's called the angel at the gate with a flaming sword, and in the Christian path it would be referred to as Satan or the devil. I often refer to it as the ego mind. In Buddhism, it's referred to as the wrathful deities. But whatever one calls this ominous specter is simply portraying the unredeemed aspects of one's lower nature that's awaiting embracement in your compassionate love and light. It just wants you to take it in your arms and rock it as a lost, frightened child. I actually did that literally did that when my lower self appeared to me. After, you know, trying to beat it up and curse it and everything, I finally realized what it was. It was the value of all my experiences. And here I was berating it. And when I realized that, I stopped in mid-rant and apologized and took it into my arms and loved it and dissolved it into my love. So when you look upon this shadow with loving gratitude and appreciation for all that it's taught you, it transforms from wrathful to beneficent in appearance. And get this, all your worst shortcomings, all your errors and mistakes are transmuted into empowerment. You don't even lose the value that your experiences have given you in illusion. Your worst thing that you can imagine you did, which you didn't really do, but you thought you did, that turns to be a great blessing, a great empowerment in your life. And this signifies a great day of victory on one's spiritual journey. So when you can look at the darkest aspects of your nature and feel genuine gratitude for every single experience you've ever had along the way, that is a day of victory. Now, the soul holds no judgment regarding any experience one has ever had, but regards every type of experience as value and as grist for the mill of one's emerging divinity. Moral values are mainly cultural, and so they arise out of cultures and points of view and conditioning within that culture. However, human values are the same for all. They're universal. The human values are truth, right action, peace, love, and harmlessness, which all together spell divinity in manifestation. In Sanskrit, they're called satya, truth, dharma, right action, shanti, peace, prema, love, ahimsa, harmlessness, or nonviolence. So as one progressively unfolds into deeper levels of self-realization, the laws pertaining to each dimension become ever more subtle, as do the tests. Who tests us? We test ourselves. Can we be trusted not to misuse our power and influence? So one is becoming a conscious servant of life. A conscious servant. And we are to serve all life, regardless of race, creed, color, circumstance, situation, or environment. This is a universal thing that applies to other beings and other worlds, other planets, other dimensions. The attitude is, how may I be truly helpful? And you offer yourself as an instrument for spirit to operate through. So one's orientation has gradually shifted from what will fulfill me, make me happy, more successful, so forth and so on, to totally losing interest in oneself. You actually forget yourself entirely. And what is so amazing is that this happens so gradually without any conscious effort that one is not even aware that one is dying to self-importance, to egoic self-interest and fascination. You're more interested in life around you, in serving others, and meeting the needs that arise in the people you interact with. You're much more interested in that. You become other-focused, not in an egoic way, but in a divinely serviceful, Christed way. And this marks a very significant turning point in one's life orientation, and one which usually goes entirely unnoticed. One loses oneself, one's lesser, lower self, to gain oneself, one's universal self. And that is one of those odd ramifications of our enlightening process. We lose ourself to gain our self. So one has transitioned from self-cherishing to self-abiding, with a capital S, and then to cheerfully abiding, whoever one happens to be, enjoying the parade of life without preferences or expectations. And this results in the state described in Sanskrit as paripurna santosha, which is a sense of deepest inner contentment and fulfillment. And it is a state of deep inner stillness. Doesn't mean your body is inactive necessarily, but there's a quietness within regardless of what the body is doing. So one is now entering the realm of conscious immortality, and one is living in seamless transparency where the inner and the outer life have merged into one. And the life of meditative inner reflection and being has merged with one's outer life of daily expression and ongoing service. One is not trying to be of service. One is not trying to do or be anything. Serving is simply happening as one's natural expression. It is much like the sun, which without any intention to do so, simply radiates as its natural expression. Likewise, the nature of one's divine self is to radiate the light and the love of divinity to all life unconditionally. And in that simple state of divine radiation is genuine service expressed. So there's no longer a doer as a separate entity acting. There is only the divine in expression through the human instrument. And at this stage, one is autonomous, a free agent of the divine source. One has entered the ranks of the immortals, though still living upon earth. Free will applies here more than ever before, for one's will and word are genuinely infused with divine authority and empowerment. One is entirely self-governed, self-directed, self-manifesting, because one's word has become the word of God. One has become the living word. And the universal forces must obey and manifest according to one's word at that stage of enlightenment. The responsibility of this level is enormous. One can readily see why so much of our early training and discipline has been centered around detachment and selfless service, nishkama karma, selfless action without attachment to the outcome. Desireless action would be another way to describe it. Because, you know, the egoic self always has an agenda in mind and a result it is seeking to attain by acting. The impersonal self is simply acted through as a conduit of the divine. Actions happen, but there's no separate self acting, no doer doing anything. Acting in this manner is like writing in the air, leaving no trace. One's actions leave no karmic residual. And that's how you live as a Jivan Mukta, a soul that is freed, even though still living on earth. Another odd ramification occurring at this stage of enlightenment, let's call it, is that though one seeks nothing at all personally for oneself, everything comes unbidden. One's slightest hint of desire is almost immediately fulfilled. Here one can witness the fulfillment of two biblical verses. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and its righteousness, and all else will be added unto you. And number two, God fulfills the desires of your heart. And you know, that's always true, regardless of our stage of awakening. Sai Baba phrases it this way, I give you what you want, until you want what I've come to give, namely, liberation itself. So we come to God with our laundry list of wishes and wants, our cures, promotions, our relationships in mind. But who comes only for liberation? Good question, huh? Of himself, Sai Baba has described his countless miracles as simply my nature and not a result of any yogic practices or powers. He has said that they are spontaneous manifestations of his love for us. His powers of manifestation as a divine avatar are unlimited. The moment something arises in his mind, it manifests immediately into tangible form. I've often sat near Sai Baba in interviews, closely watching as he would circle his downturned palm and manifest all kinds of objects for various individuals. First, I would notice a small white ball of light appear on his palm, and then instantly it would transform into a fruit or a sweet or a medallion or a rosary, a ring, a vibhuti, that sacred ash, or some other spiritually significant object. And these would cause, we'd all go, ooh and ah. And Sai Baba would say, these cause wonder to you, but to me, they are just my nature. And so when one's inner and outer natures are wedded as one, and our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions all agree, manifestation is immediate. And most don't manifest consistently because they lack congruency in that there's no agreement between the levels. One says one thing and does just the opposite. One feels a certain way inwardly, but acts contrary outwardly. So most people live lives of unnecessary complexity because they are not in touch with what they really feel, nor do they really know what they really want. And easily confused, they search here and there, not knowing even what they're seeking. They just imagine it is somehow out there in the world, somewhere, anywhere, but where they are right now. And so, as I spoke last week, it's important for you to know, what are you seeking? And are you seeking it in the right place? Which would be within your own inner cosmos. You have a whole universe existing within you. Track it by your breath into your heart and begin to explore the inner dimensions of yourself. Yeah, you're going to have to sit down and do something. You're going to have to sit down and be quiet. Close your eyes and be with yourself. Be with the sounds of nature. Be with the sounds of traffic. Be with the sounds of whatever. But just look within. Look and see what shows up. It may not show up as any kind of phenomena. It may show up as a realization, as an increase in your awareness. Just let it show up however it wants to. So, in our process, gradually all the whirling bits and pieces of our life begin to settle and fall into place. The reasons and seasons of one's life all began to make perfect sense. In dying to self, the lesser self, the lower self, the false self, in relinquishing all and everything in surrender to the divine will and call, which is really the same as your will and call as a spirit, suddenly it's all given back. Only without the guilt, remorse, shame, and pain. Everything one thought one lost is restored with a sweet kiss of appreciation and smile of gratitude. To who? To you. You have endured. You have endured through all the trials and tests and everything. And you have now inherited the kingdom of God. So, all that we've truly valued is restored intact, only even greater and better than ever. Perhaps it is because we can now truly see. We are seeing through the higher spiritual awareness now. The Christ is looking through our eyes, declaring, "Behold, I make all things new." Now perhaps the lesson looming is one of consciously wielding the power of one's spiritual authority on behalf of the highest good and well-being of all. The greatest power we have as a human being is to speak as God. On behalf of God, for God, and ultimately as God. Very, very rare that we get to that and still appear in this world, but if we do, then we would appear as a Sai Baba, as Sai Baba has, as a divine avatar, where literally the words that he speaks are the words of God. So one's word carries great weight now. So one refrains from idle speech and definitive commentary. By definitive, I mean something that defines something in such a way that there's no wiggle room for anyone else to get a word in or another interpretation. You leave space around your words and freedom around the ears of the listeners to whom you're speaking. So you're given more to silence or carefully measured words. One thinks before speaking. It is absolutely true? Is it? Is it necessary? Is it useful to add my input here? Will it benefit and edify all concerned? To edify means to build up, to encourage, to fortify, to strengthen. Do your words fortify and strengthen the divine in others? That's what we have to ask ourselves. Am I enhancing a person's sense of divinity? So one weighs carefully one's words, aware of the powerful influence they carry, so that in no way will they infringe upon another's free will. When you carry great authority and spirit, you have to be very careful that your influence doesn't coerce another where it infringes upon their free will, where they believe because you said so. So one's words are so influential, one must consider carefully what one gives agreement to, gives acknowledgement or assent to. Big test for us. We learn not to put fuel, not to lend fuel to controversies and conspiracies. Why? Because with controversy, you're increasing combativeness, argumentativeness, and conflict, although sometimes controversy is useful, but at a much lower level of unfoldment. I'm talking to very highly evolved souls right now. Conspiracies only lend fuel to suspicion and distrust. They're not building up. They're not acknowledging the truth that people who are in these levels are working out karma. They're still working in the karmic field. That's their lessons. Don't lend fuel to things that are not your business. No adding of kerosene to already raging fires of discord and polarization. No adding to divisiveness, nor lending power of assent to anything that might harm another, that could mislead, coerce, or set another in a wrong direction. These are some of the many subtle tests that arise as we go about our daily life and social intercourse. One's responsibility increases with each penetration deeper into the divine realms of the enlightening process. We become white upon white, purity upon purity. Swami Sai Baba says that purity is divinity. And yet, all the while lived out in the ordinariness of daily life. That's the test. Can you live an ordinary, loving life and be wholly, divinely realized? In highest truth, we have never left the heart of God. We remain as originally created, as holy thoughts of love within the mind of God. And yet we had a silly thought of possible separation from all of that. A silly thought, at which we forgot to laugh. And so now we are remembering, returning our minds to our holiness and laughing as we remind one another, all is well. We're safe at home now and forever. So I hope this has been helpful to you. It's where we're at right now. It's what we're doing. We are awakening as immortals, going about radiating the love and the light and the living word of the Supreme Source, and laughing as we fly together home in soul. So let's go out chanting on I, Hugh. Let's take a deep breath. On I, Hugh. On I, Hugh. All the beings in all the worlds be happy, have their needs provided, be blissful and peaceful, and awaken to their divinity. Namaste.